Perfect. All right. Back on the record, January 17, 2025, 2:45 p.m. We just finished the testimony from Mr. Sullivan. And Mr. Sullivan, sorry I didn't get a chance to thank you for your testimony before break, but thank you. And you're done with your part in this hearing. Appreciate your help on this. Ms. Nicol, you had another witness you wanted to present?
No, we are done.
Oh, okay. All right. Let's, I guess we're back to Mr. Telgen for rebuttal of witnesses at this point.
You're muted.
Yeah.
Dr. Rob Rosine.
Okay, let's bring him back up.
Should just be a couple seconds. There we go. Okay. He's headed over.
Okay, I think we're in. Hello, sorry about the delay there.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Well, hey, sorry, Mr. Rosine. I realize it's after 5 o'clock on a Friday for you out there on the East Coast, but hopefully you won't keep it too long. Let me swear you in real quick. Just raise your right hand. You swear affirm, tell the truth, nothing but the truth in this proceeding?
I do.
Oh, great. Okay, all right. Go ahead, Mr. Telgen.
Hi. Good to see you again, Dr. Rosine. Were you here today for the testimony of Ms. Heverin and Mr. Sullivan?
I was, yes.
Okay, so I'd like to talk a bit about infiltration again. Ms. Heverin, you saw my cross-examination too?
I did, yes.
Okay, so I want to go back to the Kitsap County Stormwater Manual. And I want to go to the table that Ms. Heverin began speaking about.
Yes.
With the 5 inch per hour, she identified this as sort of the threshold for what you need to show that infiltration is feasible. And it says, if I can summarize, that infiltration is only feasible if you have a measured infiltration rate of at least 5 inches per hour. Do you see that? This
I
is
do, yes.
The manual, the Kitsap County Stormwater Manual at section at page 192 or PDF page 218.
Yes, that's right.
And then I had pointed out to her that I'm going to go over to exhibit F65, which is the final geotech report. And I had pointed out to her that this was actually addressing design infiltration rate, not measured infiltration rate. Can you explain the difference between those two things?
Yes. So this table refers to steps three and four out of the infiltration feasibility criteria. So the top portion of the table, the portion that's in yellow, I guess there's multiple portions, is for the measured infiltration rate. So you see, you see
this portion up here.
Exactly. And actually you can go further all the way down to the K equivalent 127.57. Yep.
I see.
So that all refers to step three. This is one of the methods for determining a measured infiltration rate in the field. This appendix is actually done incorrectly, the way to do this is you take the KSAT, which is called the saturated hydraulic conductivity. They have six test pits here, and then you apply a correction factor for your method. The correction factor is actually listed below in the very bottom, the CF for the test method of 0.4. So that 0.4 is supposed to be applied to the average of the KSAT, which is 127.57. Okay, so that's...
But let's slow down for a second.
Sorry.
So no, that's okay. So first of all, you were here, there was different methodologies for determining a measured infiltration rate, and grain size analysis was one of them.
That's right.
Not the manuals I pointed out said you're not supposed to use that method inside the UGA, but that's what they're using here.
That's right.
But what is KSAT? I mean, you said, what is the KSAT generally referred to
okay.
in layman's terms?
So a KSAT in layman's terms is a it's just your infiltration rate. It's an intrinsic property, like how hard steel is, how heavy water is. It's not something that varies with conditions. So it's an intrinsic condition. It refers to what you would measure in the field in saturated conditions. So there's test pits. I'm sorry. There's pilot infiltration tests. There's numerous different ways to measure infiltration, and they happen to use a grain size analysis for determination of saturated hydraulic conductivity.
And then on those different test methodologies, am I correct in understanding that, when you're doing like a test pit or some, or a pilot infiltration test, you're basically digging a hole, or you're and then you're putting water in, and you're actually measuring how fast water then infiltrates into the ground?
Yes, once it's saturated, that's right. So yeah, those when you fill up a pit with water, you let them run, and depending on the size of the pit and the type of material, they have to run for a long time. It can be hours and hours for a high conductivity sand. But yes, that's
Sure.
right.
But
Yeah, they do it.
then when we're talking about measuring, that would be a way of actually measuring the infiltration rate. If you're doing a grain size analysis, are you measuring it or are you extrapolating it?
Well, okay, so there's what the stormwater manuals allow, and then there's reality. So it's not actually a measured infiltration rate, but they allow grain size analysis under their list of measured infiltration rates for small sites
Right.
outside of a UGA for residential rural applications.
But conceptually speaking, without getting into the manual, if we were to think about measuring a pilot infiltration test where you actually put water into the ground and then actually measured the results, that would be a measurement of the infiltration rate.
That's
And
correct.
I, but when you're doing a grain size analysis, is
That's
it
right.
is it's not truly a measurement. It's more of
It's
an
not.
ex, it's an extrapolation or a
It's an
prediction.
extrapolation. Yeah. And it's used because it's easy often, but it's by far a less accurate measure, which is in part why they apply the correction factor of 0.4 to the
Okay.
method.
And then for the method, when you talk about the method of arriving at a measured infiltration rate, are you referring to the Kitsap County manual or are you referring to something else?
Yeah, I was referring to the Kitsap County manual.
Okay. And so let's go back to that. And I think it was on. So this is page 379 of the Kitsap County Stormwater Manual. And I'll just this is section G36. I think this is volume three, or it's appendix G, and it says grain size analysis. And
That's right.
it tells you how to do a grain size analysis, right?
That's right.
Okay. And let's see, I'm not sure if this has the. Actually, I think, well, first of all,
So that's what they're doing there. That's right. They're
okay.
measuring the KSAT, or not measuring, they're calculating the KSAT based on the particle size distribution of these three different parameters, the D10, D60, D90, and those are just different grain sizes, and then the percentage fines. And that's your KSAT, and that's what they use that is one of the acceptable means for determining the measured infiltration rate, but you then have to apply the correction factor.
Okay.
If you scroll down, you'll see that.
I actually don't think we will, and but I'll tell you why. If we go back to exhibit F65
Yeah.
and we go up to section 4.9. It says that Ms. Decker, this is exhibit 65 at number at page 14.
All right.
She said that she did her grain size analysis as outlined in volume 3, section 3.3.6 of the 2014 Washington State Department of Ecology Stormwater Manual. You
Gotcha,
see
right.
that?
I do.
So I'm going to pull that up.
Okay, there we go. So here's our grain size analysis.
Can you see my screen?
I can, yeah.
Oh, you can. Okay. And then let's see, we're at up at, make sure we're in the right section. Yeah, 3.3.6. And this is the 2014 Stormwater Manual for Western Washington. And we'll go down to Grain size analysis. Oh, it starts right here. Yes, this is page
Yeah,
chapter
there you
three,
go.
page
That's it, right?
527.
Yep.
And first of all, we see they have these different grain sizes. Is that these 10, 60s, and 90s?
Yep, and then fines, yep.
And then if I go back to Miss Decker's report to her grain size analysis, I think we
The
see the
same
same
thing.
thing, right? 10,
60, 90.
60, 90, right? And she did that for each of the test pits.
That's correct. Yep. And you
Okay.
see that equation that they have, Ksat equals that's out of the manual.
So that's Ksat. So she figured out the Ksat for all, each of those. And then on this line right here, it says K equiv av. I think av must be average, yes?
Average, yeah, that's the average of all of them. That's correct.
That's the average of all of them. And then if we go back to the Western Washington manual that she used, so she determined the Ksat. And then let's look for, you were talking about a, was it a correction factor?
Yeah, you can scroll past this. That part above that is if you're looking at multiple layers. So now, okay, and
Okay.
you just went past it. No, you've gone too far.
Oh, I apologize. Ah, here we go. This
Yeah,
is
there we go.
table
That's
three, Roman numeral 3-3.3.1. Correction factors to be used with NT-C2 saturated hydraulic conductivity measures to estimate design rates.
right. So that's your point four, and
Point
then
four. Okay.
and that's also in shown in their in their table, but in the wrong place.
Right.
And so yeah, so to determine the yeah, there you go. So it's put at the very bottom as it applies to the facility design infiltration rate, which is not the same thing as the measured infiltration rate. So it's the third line from the bottom. It says 0.4 CF of test method. That's correct. That's one. Yeah, that one right there.
Okay. So how would we, so this is Ksat though. How would we convert that into inches per hour?
You divide it by two. So yeah. So dividing that by two, it's 63.8.
63.8. So that would be, so without a correction factor, that'd be 63.8.
63.8 inches per hour. Yep.
Okay, so that's above 5 inches per hour.
It is. And then you apply that, but you have to apply the correction factor of 0.4.
Okay, and then do you know what we get there?
25.52.
And that's also above five.
That's far above five.
Okay, and
But
so,
Mr. Telligen, it's important to note this is an average, and several of these test pits are in the areas that they're not even proposing infiltration. So if you look at their at the info the Ksats, you can, if you're just looking at the numbers, they range from 200 feet per day to 22 feet per day. And that is the same distinction that everybody's acknowledged is in the upper portion of the site versus the lower portion of the site. So the upper portion of the site is all very high infiltration rates, greater than 100 feet per day. The lower portion of the site is also still fairly high, but it's in the 20 feet per day. So my point here being that averaging across a site when they don't even have the intention of using infiltration in the lower part is biasing the data here.
Is bias in the data, but to be fair, even if you use that sort of view, you would still come up with a measured infiltration
That's
rate
right.
of over 5 inches per hour.
Exactly. Well, yeah, right. Yeah, 25 inches per hour. And this is where we th this is where engineering loses. You have to apply engineering to the sniff test, right? When we think of infiltration rates or infiltration systems in general, what types of soils do we conduct this in? It's always sandy soils, right? So soil scientists talk about four types of soils, hydrologic soil group A, B, C, and D. A's are sands, D's are clays, and we have a range in between them. A's and B's soils are the ones that are, for a stormwater engineer, are what we always hope for. The upper side of the site is all A soils, and the lower portion of the site is still B soils. So you could still work in that. So again, if we just think about it just from a high-level standpoint, does it make sense that a site with A soils is going to be infeasible? It doesn't. It doesn't at all. And that's where this 1 inch per hour piece does not even pass the basic test of soils. 1 inch per hour is what you would expect in a C soil, maybe a low quality B soil. But in an A soil, you would expect up to 100 inches an hour. And in fact, in the soil report that we have, the NRCS soil report, it lists the saturated hydraulic conductivity for these types of soils ranging from 6 inches per hour up to 99 inches per hour. And that's confirmed by their calculations here. It's consistent with their first round of calculations.
So I'm looking at exhibit F, I'm sorry, A65. Is this what you're referring to with the NRCS soils?
Yes. Yep.
Okay, and can you tell me what this document is?
Yeah. So this is a classic document that the NRCS, National Resources Conservation Service, provides. It's a great starting point for analysis. And it's in usually so what you do is you can apply this for examining your site, and then they will provide you with what the federal agency knows for soils and soil analysis. And then usually what we do is we go on to confirm through test pits whether or not this is accurate. And in fact, this is very accurate with it's completely consistent with the test pits that we've seen.
Okay, and let me just go down here. So I think
Yep,
there's
there's our
a,
soil map.
and are these
Right, so you can.
are the soils reported in this report consistent with the soils found in the test pits and the borings in this case?
They are, yeah. They're sands, gravelly sands up on top, and sandy loams on the bottom. So 19 and 20 are gravelly sands, and 1 and 2 are sandy loams. We would draw the lines a little bit differently, right? Because this is, remember, these are sort of generic. Not generic, but they're broad-based analyses. So what you do is you start with this. We know we should be able to identify what our soil types are, and then we go out in the field and we confirm them. And we have confirmed, and we've drawn our lines a little bit differently, but not hugely differently. So if you scroll down to the 19 and 20 soils, you can see saturated hydraulic conductivities that are exactly what we've seen. So 19 and
Oh.
20s are the Indianola loamy sands.
And you mean down further than where I'm at right now in the
Yeah,
document?
you gotta, yeah, keep going down.
There's two. Oh,
There you
there's
go, 19.
19.
So here, if you look at the parent formation, for example, it's a setting. So it says description of Indianola.
I'm
Under that,
sorry.
it's a
What
setting.
exhibit? I'm sorry. What exhibit number are we in again, please?
A65.
Thank you.
This says parent material, sandy glacial outwash, and that's what we know. We have outwash sands here. And if you look at the typical profile, it says sand all the way down. That's what's below it. This is confirmed by what we've seen in the test pits by Terra and Associates. And if you scroll down a little further, you can see so it says properties and qualities. And if you look at the capacity of the most limiting layer to limit the transmit of water, that's four lines down. It lists the Ksat. So in there, the high to very high range, so
Okay.
6 to 100. That isn't, if you look, if we were to look back at Appendix B, their highest measurement was 102 inches per hour. So it's very consistent. And their lowest measurement was 9 inches an hour, right? So it's these are the same materials. And if you go down just a little bit further, no, sorry, I didn't mean that far further. Just yeah, there we go. You see interpretive groups. It's a hydrologic group, soil A, and we don't see runoff in these soils. These soils, it's absurd. It's crazy to think that a type A soil wouldn't pass. It's crazy to think a type B soil wouldn't pass. It just doesn't happen. And so it is because they're not applying the test right. Step three in that criteria is for the measured infiltration rate. Step four is for the design infiltration rate. And the design infiltration rate is a totally different number.
Right, and just going back up, this is the Kitsap County Stormwater Manual again. I'm going to skip up to the steps. This is
Okay.
page 187, and again, we have one step, which is to do infiltration testing for the measured infiltration rate. And then step four is for the design infiltration rate.
Right.
Is that what you're referring to?
That's right. And if you look in the last paragraph of step three, it says the minimum allowed infiltration rates are provided in table 255 on page 192. So they're not referring to the design infiltration rate. They're referring the measured infiltration rate. And you can see in the first sentence, it says for determining measured infiltration rate. That's the first sentence of step three.
And do you agree with I think it was Ms. Heverin who said they're just interchangeable?
Absolutely not. The design infiltration rate is a completely different number. Okay, so you remember, measured infiltration rate is an intrinsic number. It's like how dense is a rock? It doesn't change, right? It's a property of that sand. Okay. A design infiltration rate is now you take that number of your measured infiltration rate and you apply Darcy's law, which is a we don't have to go into it, but there's a whole method in there, and it relies on a hydraulic gradient, so the pressure of water pushing through it. So there's this whole piece in there. If you go back to their table, it says the size of the basin, the depth of the basin, the separation from groundwater. You calculate a hydraulic gradient, and you apply a hydraulic gradient to your measured infiltration rate. That gets you a design infiltration rate. So that's what it is
Wait,
in
let me stop.
practice.
Okay. So when you say their table, are you referring to
Appendix B
this
from
one?
the that one. That's right. So
Okay.
if you look, so this table is confusing two methods. The top method is step three, and the bottom method is step four, except that the bottom method, step four, includes incorrectly
The point four.
the point four. That should be applied at the upper rate. I mean, it's actually fine if they're going straight to design, but they're not this that's not it's a misapplication of it. They shouldn't be. It's fine if they want to apply it then if they're just looking at design infiltration rates.
Right, and I think as the applicant has pointed out several times, they aren't going straight to design, right?
Yeah,
This is
no,
a, this is
this is for sizing basins.
this
Right
this
now we're
is
trying to determine whether or not what BMP we stop at on the list approach.
right, and right now we are at the feasibility stage.
That's right. We're not sizing BMPs. This is for sizing BMPs.
Okay, so basically, if I can understand it. The top half of this, generally speaking, is for feasibility of whether infiltration is feasible.
That's right.
The bottom half is for when you're actually designing a BMP, how big you make it.
That's right. Because it's got it, the numbers are incredibly different. If you look at that 127.57 feet per day, and then they report 1.2 inches per hour. Those things are different numbers, right? It's because of your hydraulic gradient, which, yeah, they're just you can't you're it's applying apples and oranges.
Now, so then, so because they're different numbers, I guess when I look at these, I would think, well, geez, that's weird, right? I mean, I guess I don't know, but 127.57 sounds a lot bigger than to me than 1.2. I mean,
Right.
is it strange in your mind that that there's such a disparity in the numeric values of those two things?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's yeah, absolutely. The methods are being done wrong and they're being reported incorrectly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Ms. Heverin said instead that she thought that the measured infiltration rate was this 3.7.
Yeah, it's yeah. Yeah, it's not.
Looking at the actual methodology for how you derive a measured infiltration rate, can you say, is that 3.7 the measured infiltration rate?
No way. Yeah, absolutely not.
Okay.
No. Because remember, if you just look at whatever that would be, row 10 or thereabouts, that's the KSAT, right? KSAT is what we were shown for being a measured infiltration rate is one of the acceptable methods. Grain size analysis times the correction factor. And what you've got there at 3.7, they've now applied a hydraulic gradient to that. So they're applying Darcy's law and all these other things.
Okay. And can I ask you, if I go back to the Kitsap County Manual, we also spent time looking at this table. And I had pointed out that there's this footnote saying you're not actually supposed to do a grain size analysis if you're dealing with a property inside an urban growth area.
Right.
I believe Mr. Sullivan indicated that he didn't think that was a problem. Do you think that's a problem?
Yeah, I think it's a huge problem. If you could even scroll down a little further, let's go. I'm frankly quite surprised that I mean the county allows it to happen, but I'm surprised that a grain size analysis is allowed. But it is. It is
Well,
it
it is outside the UGA. I mean,
outside the UGA, yeah.
no one has contested, I mean, that under this table, you're actually allowed to use a grain size analysis for this inside the UGA.
Correct. Right.
Right.
But it just seems odd to me that we would rely on a grain size analysis for a BMP that, treating over an acre of runoff.
So going back to the, I
But
mean,
that's a different point.
we started this case, a little bit looking at the applicant's drainage report, and they claim to be following minimum requirement five, the list approach, and they are concluding that infiltration is not feasible. I guess after looking at the methodologies that you're supposed to follow to make that determination, do you have an opinion as to whether they actually followed those methodologies?
Yeah, absolutely. They did not, right? And because we know that they shouldn't have applied a grain size analysis in the first place because it's inside the UGA, right? They applied the grain size methodology incorrectly, and then the last part we heard by Mr. Sullivan was with some issues with respect to a slope,
Yes.
and there are slope concerns in there, sure, but there's lots of areas that have low slopes.
So can we turn to that for a second?
Yeah.
So when I was talking to Mr. Sullivan, and granted, I asked him what sheet he was looking at, and this was the first sheet that this is the sheet that he pointed to. This is Exhibit 50, page 35, sheet C3.00. He was saying wherever you see the lines really close together, you can't put an infiltration facility within 50 feet of them. That's what I understand his testimony to be. But I just want to point out this map appears to be an overlay of the oh, it's right. It's a composite grading plan. So it has both the existing and the proposed topography. And so the next one is actually the finished topography, which I believe is what he was referring to. Have you looked at this document?
I have, yes.
Does it appear to you that you could put infiltration facilities in here to manage the site's stormwater while abiding by this alleged rule that you can't put an infiltration facility within 50 feet of a steep slope?
It does, yeah, all over the place. Yeah, there's lots of locations where it could be done. I mean, bioswales, for example, are expressly for this purpose, right? So yeah, this site has some challenges, as does every site. But this is a really good site for design for infiltration. So 50 feet from a steep slope. Well, I think you can put it. I mean, I design these routinely for dry wells. Dry well can go anywhere. Right, it could go in the front yard, it could go in the backyard. So you have all these spots that have. If you look at this, for example, the lots generally look like they have. They're kind of split in half. There's a 15 foot, or there's a steep slope in the middle of them, but then there's a pad in the front and there's a pad in the back. You just go some distance away. That's not the only constraint they're going to have. They're going to have, oftentimes we have to put them 50 feet away from septic systems and other things. So ha having that type of requirement is not unusual. And we can get away. I mean, if you look, for example, on Road B, which is the one that has the big turnaround up at the top.
This one right here.
Yeah. And if you measure the distance between, you don't have to measure the distance, but you see, do you see 189, lot 189? Yeah. And and if you go from the bottom of that slope, actually right where your cursor is, and go to the right to the next major contour line. Yeah, right there. That's about a 2% grade right in there, and over 100 feet. And so that's just an example of everything in between there, which is every house along the way has the ability to have a dry well. A dry well is really easy. You dig a hole in the ground, put some stone in it, put a downspout, done. So that's all, every rooftop could be managed that way. There's not one rooftop I see on this plan set, not one, that couldn't be managed with a dry well. Okay, so that's rooftop runoff. And then and the next one is road runoff. You again, road B, bioswales are intended for to be used for linear features for exactly this. If you zoom in on road B, so we can see what you'll see on there is there's a they're running a swale, a ditch along the side of the road. They already have a ditch. Do you see that? There's a ditch already present. That's where your bioswale goes. And we have standard details for this. It's not complicated. The slope is low, the soils are fine, and you use the same drainage network that we have everywhere else, right? So they have all these storm drain pipes, which are important. So then you can manage your smaller storms with bioretention, and if they still want to pipe it to a pond at the bottom of the slope, they can still do that. Or they could probably get rid of the ponds or at least shrink them dramatically. But it is completely inaccurate to say that we're too close to slopes 50 feet away. We have lots of room here. And we have low slopes and we have high quality soils with infiltration rates that range from 5 to 100 inches per hour.
All right. Is there anything you want to touch on this point, or should we move on to another topic?
Yeah, I do have one other one. If you could scroll to the bottom of this, bottom right, actually, I think it's probably going to be the next composite sheet down. Okay. So,
All right. Yeah. Okay.
yeah. Actually, I think it might even be the next one. Is there one more below this? And one more, keep going. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so this is kind of getting to the bottom area where we are sort of getting into some poorer quality soils. We heard from Mrs. Decker that about limitations for infiltration with groundwater. I looked at all the test pits that were down that were done down in the area that where they're not even proposing infiltration. And there's no groundwater shown in any one of them. I looked at every one of them that was down in that area, and groundwater was not reported at in any of the test pits. And the test pits go as much as 15 feet deep in some places. And so she's right in saying that we need separation from the bottom of our systems and groundwater, but we have no indication that groundwater is even a problem here, and. The detail in this plan set, there's a composite detail. There's a detail in the stormwater at the end that shows these dispersion trenches they're using. And the dispersion trenches can be as shallow as 18 inches deep and as deep as 4.5 feet deep. Reason I say that is because there are places where we know that the soils are only about 6 feet deep. So we could shrink them right up. We could make it 2 feet deep and fairly long. And we could then recharge groundwater in interflow in a way that would feed Barker Creek. So I'm pointing this out because we seem to have accepted as a valid position that there's no infiltration possible on the lower portion of the site. And that's really not true. It's hydrologic soil group B, and the infiltration rates in there, we have two test pits in there. Those were the ones that were 22 feet per day and 28 feet per day. So half of that in inches per hour would be 11 inches per hour and 14 inches per hour. That's still very good. And then you apply 0.4 to that. We're at 4.5 or above. So we're still in the realm where we can do infiltration testing. One of those, every test pit that they had there except for one would have passed. And it barely would have been out, 4.5 instead of 5. So there's just when it comes to infiltration, we know that it's possible here. And then I guess a lot, do we want let's talk can we talk a little bit about bioretention and 6-PPD quinone?
In just a moment, one of the other things that Miss Decker mentioned is you can't do an infiltration facility next to a wall. Do you have an opinion on that?
I was, as the president of Terra Associates, I was surprised to hear her say she's never seen that. I could name a dozen off the top of my head. Almost every big box store that I'm aware of does that, right? So what does a big box store do? They come in and they cut one side of the site, fill the other, they build a huge retention wall, and they put infiltration chambers underneath. We do it all the time. Yes, we have to design the wall properly. You put in a liner, you backfill it with stone, you put drains underneath it, make sure that there's never any pore pressure behind a wall. You can set it off 10 feet, 20 feet if you have to. We have space here. Walls are not limitations. They're design challenges, but they're not reasons that we can't do infiltration here. It's absolutely incorrect to say that you cannot have infiltration behind that. It's done everywhere. I suspect we could find a detail in these manuals that show chambers in the vicinity of walls. I haven't looked, but it's not uncommon to see this.
You were going to say something about 6 PPD quinone.
Okay, so the report that was done by, for the legislature on 6 PPD quinone does list bioretention as being a good system, and it is good. But what it also says is infiltration is best, and underdrained systems are worse. So if they were proposing bioswales in the upper portion of the facility that didn't have underdrains, that would be a phenomenal treatment measure. Because you have both the vegetated filtration, so the particulates getting filtered out, and you have the infiltration component. So it's a double layer of protection. But what they're proposing is bioretention, which is good, but it's not nearly as good as what this site is capable of. Because they're underdrained, you're eliminating the most protective means that we know of, which is infiltration. And as I've said repeatedly, this site is as good as it gets for infiltration. You have type A soils everywhere.
And earlier we had talked about the benefits of infiltration. So I mean, infiltration is being, I mean, at this stage we have a drainage report saying it's not feasible. We have Ms. Heverin saying it's not feasible under, at least under the manual, because of the I guess because of the design infiltration rate. We have this new theory that it's not feasible because of setback requirements. But infiltration is really important, right? It would help the aquifer, yes.
Oh yeah, right.
And it'd be better in terms of 6 PPD quinone.
Right.
So should this be something that ought to be rigorously assessed or just sort of passed over?
Yeah, I would think it would need to be rigorously assessed. Yeah, because we've talked a fair amount about whether this it's better to put water in as surface flow or whether it's better to put water in as base flow. Mr. Sullivan said he wasn't concerned about temperature because it's dry in the summer months. But if we put water into ponds during the wet months, they're going to drain within a week or less, right? So you're short circuiting, you're reducing base flow for the summer months. We should be even more concerned about the lack about what's going to happen in base flow at this site. Because of the lack of rain in the summer months. But it's not just high temperature we're worried about. If you recall, I showed that the ponds push the temperature extremes high and low. So there's an upper optimum limit and there's a lower optimum limit. And you make the water too cold for them in the wintertime. So we do have that problem. So regardless of whether it's too hot, too cold, the Goldilocks zone is groundwater, and retention ponds just never look like groundwater. They just don't. Goldilocks for salmonid is cold water base flow, which is
Cold.
only accomplished through infiltration, period.
Right. Cold water, not freezing water.
Not freezing water, not hot water.
I think that might be it. Is there anything else you wanted that you had to testify about, Dr. Rosine?
No, I think that's it. Thank you.
Very good. I have no further
Okay,
questions.
Ms. Kolesnikova, any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Examiner. Just a couple questions. In your testimony about the design of the stormwater system, so is it your position that there should not be a stormwater detention pond calculated at this point in time for the project? That we should just rely on infiltration?
No, I'm not sure that's my position.
Okay.
I think I would say my position is that we should start with a list approach, and then what we can accomplish with that, that would be our first layer of design, right? You'd see how you can do with downspouts, full downspout infiltration and bioretention. And with all of that, if you can't control what you need, then you put ponds in. One of the important parts that we need to recognize with advanced stormwater management, which is what most of the storm what when you take ponds out of the list, we're generally talking about advanced
Didn't
stormwater.
ask about that, and we don't need
No,
to
no,
expand
no, no. Let me
a whole
finish
bunch
this.
further.
Let
My
me finish, please.
question was whether you would want the ponds to be taken out, and as I understand it, the answer is no, you wouldn't.
No, yeah, ponds, flood control is an important element, but it's not everything. And so we need, I'm not advocating for lack of peak flow control, but we would need to see how all the numbers run before we get to that.
I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. I believe you testified in direct that you are not a licensed geotech. Oh my goodness, it's Friday afternoon. That you're not a licensed geologist, right?
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
But it is worth noting that I'm allowed to practice in
We
areas
wouldn't need
within
that,
my
but.
areas of expertise,
I understand
and
that you have
the
done
use of
some
the type
engineering.
of information
Yes.
is standard for stormwater engineers.
Okay. I don't have any other questions for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kolesnikova.
Okay. Ms. Nickel, anything?
No, county has nothing further.
Okay, Mr. Talzin, any redirect?
So on the question of the ponds, whether we should take them out, take them in, or leave them in, all that kind of questions. I mean, should we be making any of those conclusions before the applicant actually provides an assessment using the methodology that the manual calls for to determine if infiltration is feasible?
Right, exactly. So, I
Yeah.
mean, that's it. We need to design for, I mean, it's impossible to know. I've seen sites that can accomplish everything they need with infiltration. This could be one of those sites. We heard Mr. Kindred testify to that as well, that sites that infiltrate more than they do pre-development. And this, in my opinion, when I look at the site, that's exactly the type of site I see that we could do here. But it's too early to know.
Okay, very good. I have no further questions.
Okay, thank you again, Dr. Rosine. And I guess you can enjoy the rest of the weekend. What's left of it?
Okay, thank you all very much. You have a great night.
Yeah, you too. All right, Mr. Talgin, any other rebuttal witnesses?
I have not been able to talk to Mr. DeLubisher. I think he might be watching now, but I haven't had a ch I it might be relatively recently, so I have not had a chance to speak with him.
Okay, I mean, can you reach them right now if we take a break and come back? Because we also have to figure out how we're going to wrap all this up. We can take our
Yeah,
15 minutes.
I was thinking about taking a
Okay.
break so I can call him
Okay.
and be
And
more.
I do see him on the attendee list as well.
Okay.
Okay, so let's come back at 3:45 then.
All right, thank you.